Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast, and today we're doing a crossover episode where I join the podcast of Conscious Hospitality with host David Araya. I've known David for many years now, and I'm very excited to be one of the first guests on his podcasts. I give a couple of stories that I've never told anyone before publicly, so I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you haven't visited our YouTube channel yet, make sure to check out the Hospitality Mentor and discover our 50 Hotels in 50 Day Challenge. I'd love to see you over there. Now, enjoy the episode.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Conscious Hospitality Podcast. This is David, your host, and I'm here with another fantastic conversation. Every week on Monday, we publish another conversation with some of my favorite people around the world, and today is no exception. I've got my great friend, Steve Turk, here, who is joining me for another wonderful conversation surrounding consciousness, hospitality, and everything in between. Steve has a renowned career where he's held executive positions overseeing food and beverage, but also all sorts of different operations with some of the world's most well-known companies, such as Lowe's, Mandarin Oriental, Nobu, Trump, Delano. He's been all over in his hometown, Miami, and that's where he and I connected early on in my career, and we've become and remained friends throughout the entire process. And this journey for him has now taken him into entrepreneur mode. And over the past few years, he started an incredible venture called the Hospitality Mentor, where he's guiding people and inspiring them to be very proud of being in the hospitality world. And so a lot of aligned paths there. And he's also jumped into several different other ventures, which I'm excited to talk about today. So without further ado, I give you my friend, Steve Turk. Steve, welcome to the show.
Wow, I love this, man. That was a great intro. I love the energy. I'm going to be walking around with you more often, I think. This is a great way to be introduced.
Well, brother, I'll start by saying, listen, I start all of my podcast episodes with gratitude. To me, gratitude is the biggest superpower we have, and it's what shields us from all the day-to-day craziness and madness that comes into our lives. And so if we start with gratitude, we ground ourselves into the moment. And my gratitude goes to you. You talk about energy and you talk about positivity and you talk about wanting to walk alongside someone. I've been following specifically what you've been doing over these past few months. And wow, that's the energy bus that I'm talking about, man. You're really giving tons of people hope. I love how you highlight the fact that sometimes the road isn't always peachy and rosy and perfect. And you highlight those moments as well. I love the fact that you're, bringing everybody along for the ride, this whole thing that you did with 50 hotels in 50 days. Wow. That's energy, and that's driving a whole bunch of energy around people. So my gratitude moment today goes to you, man. I'm really grateful for everything that you're doing. I'm curious, what are you grateful for today, Steve?
Well, look, I have a journal that I write in every day. It's actually over to my right. And I started that because I was trying to find things I was grateful for. Because you said it, like when you're grateful for things, you realize like we have so much more than so many other people around the world. But I'm going to shout, grateful to you. When I met you, it was a very special time in Miami's history. And I was just looking back before I was going to talk to you at some of the pictures from your hotel, the East Hotel, when this whole neighborhood was under construction, which has changed, the southeast of the United States of America, this neighborhood that you were a part of helping put together and bring the energy to this part of the city. So grateful I was able to go on behind the scenes and see this be created. It was a special, I didn't realize how special that day was. You walk into some of these projects, this is one that changes the face of all of Miami. So was grateful to be able to do that with you. Now, is it scary to say like 8 years ago?
I know, it's unbelievable.
9 years ago, it's crazy.
It's unbelievable. The difference is that, you look younger than that day. I look much older, it's quite the contrast. So here, so, on the podcast, Steve, I really like to focus on two big elements, which is the consciousness piece and really becoming more present, more aware. You and I have had a few conversations about this in the past and how important it is in today's distracted world to really try to live the moment and appreciate everything we have. And then, of course, the hospitality piece, which is our big passion and our shared love, right? It's this industry that we are now really focused on bringing that voice out to people and to hopefully inspire younger generations. So I think, this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I'd like to start at the very beginning, and that's at the beginning of your life, Steve. So I'd like to backtrack to when you were a child and for you to tell us a little bit about what Steve was like when he was a little kid.
Oh, wow. Well, let's see. When I was little, I'm the oldest of three brothers. So firstborn, you know, you're always got the toughest go. As now that I'm a parent, I see how much harder I was on my firstborn. So my parents were always very loving and giving to me. My dad, a fantastic attorney here in Miami, and my mom from Venezuela. So I had two mixes, right? I had the white American Jewish dad and the Venezuelan mom. A good mix, like kind of like the story of Miami.
It's the hybrid, it's perfectly of everything. Representative of both. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a good culture there. But growing up, I was always very competitive, always in team sports, but always like captains of teams and always leaders. And that was something throughout elementary school, middle school, high school, and even in to college, where I was leading teams and fraternities and always being involved in things. So that was just naturally in me. And I didn't realize that, you know, sometimes you are born with being a leader. That's just how you are. It's not made for everybody. And looking back as a kid, everything I did was always being very competitive and trying to be the best at certain things and always wanting to learn new things and meet new people. So that's how I was as a kid. And then I see it now in my kids too. You start seeing some of these traits. They're 6 and 8. And I'm like, wow, I had that. You know, like that's very cool to see that they're like that too.
I'm curious, as you were growing up and you were, you know, becoming part of these teams and you were, you know, being selected captain, what would you say are some of the traits that you had in you that were natural as you look back that made that selection possible?
I think what was cool about where I grew up was I got to be around all different kind of people, right? It wasn't just like one type of demographic. I was with all different kind of cultures, especially grew up in Miami. You had South American, Caribbean, you know, rich, poor, middle class, all these different people. And I was able to be friends with all different kinds of people. And so I think we call it EQ now, right? They have that emotional intelligence of being able to understand how to put myself in their shoes just for maybe a couple of seconds or a minute, just to be able to talk to people that way. And I think that's what's helpful, especially, you know, I say I play basketball, people laugh at me now, but I was this tall since I was like in fourth grade or fifth grade. So I was supposed to be really tall. It didn't turn out that way. But being on these teams, I think that was what it was. Like, hey, I knew what somebody needed at that moment to be able to talk to them. And I think that's how coaches saw me and, you know, be able to talk to them that way. And I see that now in my career too, that helped me grow very quickly was, especially in hotels, it's the same thing. All different demographics, all different backgrounds. How can I motivate them? What are their goals? Not everyone's driven by getting promoted and making money. Everything is different for everybody. So
yeah,
I think that's what really helped me. And I saw as a kid that I could figure that out.
Yeah, we share that. Absolutely, that trait. We talked a while back about this chameleon element, right? That we can adapt to our environments and that we can, you know, again, like you say, this EQ where I wasn't always the best player on the team, but I most certainly had the attitude that everybody needed. Right. Yep. And sometimes it was an attitude of, hey, let's go and go hard. And sometimes it was the attitude of, hey, let's take a breather. Let's step back. And I was able to read those spaces and the team energy for sure when they most needed it. Right.
Yeah. There was a moment. I still remember this in high school because I was not the best player in high school. Now, there's some NBA guys that were in our league and on the team. But there was one guy, all the talent in the world, was our best player for sure. And he would just lose his cool, like bad temper all the time. And I remember pulling him aside in the middle of a game. I was like, come on, man, we need more than you than this. You can't be freaking out on people. Like, you're our best player. You got to lead the way, lead by example. And that moment clicked for him. And I think I look back at that. I was only 16 at the time. Like, that's something as a 16 year old, like, wow, that's pretty impressive at that age for anybody to be talking to someone like that. And it works.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think that continues on. Just motivate people, but also hold people like to their accountable. Like, you're better than this. You could do this. So
that's right.
I look at that a lot. We don't do that enough now in these times, I don't think.
No, and it's interesting. You know, we can continue on now as you leave high school. And did you have any idea as to what you wanted to do? Did you know right away this is what's for me, or did you have?
What's funny is I had to explore a little bit. Like, I loved hotels. I was lucky enough that my dad, like I had mentioned, he was an attorney, and so he represented big hotels. Like, that was his big portion of his business. Like, the Fontainebleau was one of his clients. And so I was always running around the Fontainebleau where you worked as like a little kid. We were there all the time. And one of his best friends was the hotel manager. So to me, it was like a fantasy world. And I loved going to all these places.
Yeah.
But that's all it was like, I had one summer job at the Lowe's. Was great. Cabana boy running around the pool deck at like 17, 18 years old. And then went to college. I wanted to be like my dad. I was going to be a lawyer. Right. That's all. I remember watching Few Good Men with like Tom Cruise, and you watch all these shows. It's like, I'm going to be that guy. Then I realized that's not what it is. And I remember I went to Florida State University, and I was a junior, and I remember studying for the LSATs, and I was like, I don't like this at all. And I remember calling my dad, and he's like, look, you got a long life ahead of you. And so if you don't like it now, find what you like doing. Like, if you want to be, he's like, I'll be happy. If you were a garbage man, be the best garbage man. If you want to be this, be the best that. And I remember that stuck with me because he could have done it the other way.
Yeah.
Said, no, you're going to go do it.
Well, I think it's one of the elements that I found consistent between the conversations that we've been having is that as children are growing up, their environments very much shape them to the point where they forget about their true nature, their true self, and they go with whatever the environment is asking from them, right? And that's, you know, when you think about it, you're 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, you had a pretty advanced EQ, but most people don't necessarily have that. And they weren't raised with the tools to be able to foster that. I think we're doing a better job now as parents because we've seen the positive repercussions of that. But the pressure that comes from the family environment to be something specific or to tell you that you can't be certain things is huge, right? So did you feel any sort of pressure having an attorney as a father and I can assume a pretty outspoken Latin mom to be a specific something?
I don't think it was specific. It was more just like, you can be successful. You need to work hard. You need to study. You need to get good grades. Like these, you don't need to go to work. Your job is to make good grades, right? Mm-hmm. I remember hearing that a lot. So there was pressure to be like, all right, I need to maintain good grades and keep this up.
Yeah.
And I look back now and laugh. I wish I would have spent more time in studying in classes on stuff I liked, right? Like, I think I would actually do better now, but I did well enough to keep my scholarship and have a great social life.
Yes.
You'd say.
Yes.
Right, president of the largest fraternity on campus. You know, it was like a fantasy world for 4 years at Florida State, which is great.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of the dance of life as well, is that you do like that being the president of a fraternity has an absolute direct correlation with your passion today.
I was running a business and a hotel.
Totally.
And marketing and being in front of people, making
and
sure
people. And interacting with people and, you know, trying to drive a certain That's direction, great. Specifically that. So even though sometimes we don't know that we're heading in that direction, the path is already laid out for us in a way, right? So which is absolutely beautiful. And so when did you actually make the full jump into the hotel world?
Yeah, so it's funny. Right around that time, I had that conversation with my dad. He's like, look, just figure out what you like. You really liked working at the Lowe's that summer. Maybe that's something there. Talk to my friend. His name is Paul Breslin, one of my mentors. And he gave me some great advice. He's like, look, you already have a great personality. That's more than half. You got a good, hardworking effort. Now you're at 90%. The rest of the 10%, you'll learn. And he said, try to stick with good brands if you come out. That should be your goal. And you'll learn from the best. And so that stuck with me, and I switched to hospitality administration in the business school of Florida State and had a great time switching over. And then I came out. I took a job for a little bit, which was not what I liked doing, working in a staffing company, which actually tied to how we met. a staffing company for hospitals, of all things, because they threw a big number at me at the time, which I thought was huge. You're like, you're going to make $50,000 out of school. I was like, I'm rich. Let's go.
Let's go. Yes, exactly.
But quickly realized I need to go back to hotels. And I ended up back at the Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel as a recreation assistant manager, right on the pool deck where I started. So that was fun.
What an amazing kind of jump back in. And sometimes we need those reminders. We often need those reminders of what we don't want in order to actually appreciate what we do want or what we have, right? And that's a perfect example of that. And so tell us a little bit about your career and specifically maybe focusing on some of these pivotal moments that you had where you became more grounded and you became more aware of like, okay, this is me, this is where I am, this is what I need to be focusing on and made your life a little bit more intentional.
Yeah. So Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel was a great spot. And I've had a couple stops there, but the first round I was diehard. Like you could, like I took it like a sports team. Like I would bleed for that place. Like I would be there all the time, every day, every holiday, every meeting that they needed something a part of, I was there. And, you know, I didn't realize this at the time that, you know, leaders come and go in hotels and then teams start to change. And so I think this is a good story for people. I haven't shared this much publicly. But what it happens is I win an award, you know, team member or manager of the quarter for December. I'm like, yeah, at the highest high of my young career. My F&B director at the time was a great guy named Wayne Malagon. He ends up leaving. And the hotel manager says, Steve, you're going to get promoted. You're going to be director of restaurants. And before I leave, I remember Wayne telling me, he's like, Steve, you're not fully ready for this. Like, just you got to study a lot. Like, you've only been doing this for a little bit. This is a big role. And I was like, all right, I'll learn. The next guy comes in, and I just did not click with that leader, right? And for whatever reason, it just did not work and had it out for me. And it was the first time I ever had that in my career to where, whoa, like I've been doing this for 3-4 years and now I'm not gelling. Yeah. And the person looked me in the face, brought me into his office and said, Steve, I think it's time for you to find another career. You're not made for hospitality. Mm. Right? I might maybe only shared this privately once or twice, but I think this is good for today. And I remember I broke down. I'm like, what? Like I've been giving everything to this place. And I broke down. I remember walking out of his office. The heck, like, yeah, could that be? It's like, no, I am made.
Well,
you start
questioning yourself, right?
Yeah, it's like I am made for this.
Your ego is hurt, and you're like, yeah, that can't.
I just won an award, and it seemed like I couldn't regain the ground with when you don't have that leader that really wants you there. Because it shows, like any sports team, right? Certain coaches get the best out of certain players, and that player leaves and does great somewhere else,
totally.
Or vice versa.
Totally.
So I remember that was the first time where I was like, all right, I'm going to find mentors that really. Looking out for me, I had some there, and a lot of them say, maybe it's time to go look for something. And that's how I ended up at Mandarin Oriental. I met some of my best friends and best leaders that I'm still in touch with today.
Yeah.
So I think for anyone that's maybe going through that change, that was one of those moments where I stressed so much for like a couple of months. I remember it maybe 3 or 4 months, and I couldn't sleep. And it was like, I went from like, I am the best to like, am I not supposed to be here? Like, what happened?
Or worried for your job. And your livelihood,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Your That's livelihood,
the,
your job.
It's the other piece, right? Is that because you start going down this downward spiral. I've been there as well where a leader told me, listen, David, there's hundreds of brands out there. Why don't you pick one that actually matches who you are? That was the message that landed for me. And it was probably in similar points in our career. I was an assistant manager in the front office.
Yeah.
And my leader at the time, which I'm so grateful for, it wasn't that I wasn't gelling with her, but I didn't match the hotel environment. You know, this double-breasted suit, thick tie at the Pierre. And that wasn't me at all, you know? And that's what led me to Fountain Blue was completely a different vibe. And so I was matching, I was trying to find something that matched me a lot more. And Fountain Blue was a million times more who I was. And look at the difference, right? I went from failing at one to thriving in the other in a matter of weeks, you know? And so it's impressive how, but like you say, one person has such a humongous impact on you as an individual and on your performance as well.
Yeah. And looking back now, I thank that person, not for how they treated me, but I thank that person because I wouldn't have gone on this journey and learned and seen all these different things and learned my philosophy changed a little bit was I'm not going to be loyal, ultra loyal to companies, but I will be to people. Mm. Right. And that kind of shaped my career journey. Cause I would go with people. They would call me and say, hey, can you want to come? And that's how I started moving up and continuing to move up.
Amazing. And so you went from the Lowe's to the Mandarin, completely different styles, but different
styles,
you know, different approaches to hospitality in a way.
Yeah. Mandarin was cool because I learned true five-star, five diamond, you know, the Mandarin Oriental really takes things from Asian culture and blends it in. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I told some people there, Antonio Racias, who's now at the Lowe's as the hotel manager. He was my F&B director there. I said I should have stayed longer, but it was the first time I chased money in my career, which took me to the Delano.
Interesting.
They paid me like the most I'd ever made.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, Delano, you know,
now
I come
I'm making
South
it.
Beach. Now I'm making it. I was like, all right, general manager of restaurants and nightclubs and all this cool stuff. And then
was it specifically the title? I mean the money, or was it the money and the title both?
I think for the first time I thought I was like the money, right? It was like, wow.
It really
like,
was
this
the money,
is
yeah.
Big money, a cool hotel, and I wasn't sold on it 100%, but I was like,
I can figure it out.
Yeah, I can get here. I could do this. And right away, it was like celebrity hotspot. Like you had Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, and Katy Perry and Russell Brand. Everyone was there all the time.
Yeah.
And then they sold 10 months in and my whole life changed again. I was like, what the heck? You know, like I just got here. All right.
I laugh because my, your career and my have so many parallels in that it's yeah. such a roller coaster, and we'll continue going down this roller coaster. But
yeah.
when you think that you're finally somewhere, it happens again. Right. And, or the economy hits or someone sells or the thing that they promised you early in your venture, all of a sudden is no longer there.
Gone.
Sometimes it's something better. Sometimes is something worse. You know, it's all about adapting, and talk about needing to be a chameleon, right?
Yeah, I remember I was like, man, I just left Mandarin Oriental, which wasn't paying much, but great, I say university. Like they taught me everything about every Forbes standards, which I still use today.
Right? Yeah.
I still use it, and I still preach a lot of things that I do there. But when Delano, when they sold, I was like, all right, I could stay. But then they were like, you're not going to make as much. And the owners came in from Las Vegas, which is not my style. They were out partying. The owner came in, we won't use any names and we won't say the company, came in wasted at like 3 a.m, kicked one of my assistant managers in the butt, like actually kicked him because wow. there was no room service available. And you're like, this guy's out of his mind. So
yeah,
we and both it kind left. Of, it we makes both you, left.
It makes you consider, you know, one of the things, there's just so many lessons to unpack here. And I'd love, as we're going
yeah,
through
we can go
here,
always back, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be good to like, as people that have been through all of this, because a lot of people listening are perhaps not this far along in their career, there's a lot of lessons. And one of them is really to pick the style of hotel and be really mindful of what are the day-to-day activities that happen in that hotel. Because for me, yep. it was with Fontainebleau a little bit. You know, I got to a point where I was struggling with the fact that there were these crazy parties, yet we were catering to all sorts of people, right? So we had, like, I remember the picture on the website was a bellman with two kids on the bell cart running through the lobby and having a great time. Yet, you know, we had these crazy pool parties on Sundays that you would never, ever bring your 12 or 14 year old daughter through. And I remember as the hotel manager on a Sunday morning having to talk to a guest that said, hey, I brought my 14 year old daughter. We arrived at 11 p.m. on Sunday night to Fontainebleau. And what is this place, right? And what can you say to that? You're like, you're absolutely right, sir. I'm so sorry. This is not a place fit for families, you know? So
yeah.
It's one example of, you know, you really have to go and find the environment where you feel comfortable, at ease, where your values align in the specific moment in time that you're in, right? So if you're younger, old, you know, earlier in your career, you may go find something that's a little bit more lifestyle, maybe something that has a little bit more nightlife, et cetera. Or, you know, maybe it's not an age thing, but later on in your life or earlier on in your life, you want to go for that more polished, yeah. super ultra luxury environment. You know, so tell me a little bit about how, you know, how that has resonated for you, also tying it into the mentorship piece that you now do, right?
Yeah. And that is a great way to kind of say is like, don't be afraid to taste different things. And when I say that is like, You sometimes people, I've seen them and they've talked to me, like they stay at a place for 10, 15, 8, 20 years. And they've never gone anywhere else because they're afraid that it may not be good for them. And I get it. Like you want to stay safe and do those things. But if you really want to make moves and move up, you've got to try different places. And I like to say like every 2 to 4 years, you should be doing those things, like trying to go somewhere and see something new. Like I never left the city. I could have moved up with other companies. But I wanted to stay in Miami, so I did my thing going to different hotels.
Yeah.
But I think you really have to find your vibe. Like I know that I am not a tie-on, 5-star, 5-diamond downtown hotel person, but I do like the 5-star, 5-diamond service just in a maybe a more relaxed environment.
Yeah.
Right? I do like that. That's for me. Like I like yeah. that. And so it took me a while to realize what I like because I got to try all different places.
Yeah, agreed. And the same goes, you know, as you go up in your career, you get into these senior leadership positions that some of our listeners may be in. And a key factor for me is the ownership group of these hotels, right? And what they really stand for, because a lot of the times in my experience, I've had to represent the operating company. And I've been in a situation or two or three where perhaps the values that the leadership group at the ownership side didn't necessarily match what the whole hotel was representing, and they wanted very different things. And so I think it's super important to really do a deep dive into what the ownership group is all about. What are their true values, specifically if you're a GM going in, because that's your main relationship outside of the of the management company is the ownership group. And so I don't know if you have anything else to add there,
Steve. No, I think it makes sense, especially when you're coming up. You think that once you get to that executive level, like you are golden, you just never know. Like you said, the owners may have they may be a REIT that just their goal is to buy and sell after 3 or 4 years. Then you're dealing with new owners that change things completely. So I agree with you. Really knowing who the owner is of that product makes a big deal, because you may want to work in a family asset that's going to be in that family for multiple generations and have that stability, or you're joining something else that may be flipped several times. And I've been in both situations.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Cool. So you were at the Delano, and you were, you know, in this hot shot position with all the money, then the hotel sold and you decided to leave. What next?
So it was interesting. This is where I had a choice to make, and I had two offers. One was to the new St. Regis Hotel opening up in Bal Harbour, Florida, which was like the top of the top, but you had to take a half step back. Everyone Pretty joining had to take a half step back was what the pitch was. And I had just gotten engaged like 2 weeks prior. And the other job I had was at the Viceroy Hotel in downtown Miami, which was like a residence of 1,800 condos plus the 180-room hotel. So it's very different vibes. Hmm. And it was very simple. I met Sylvia Peretta, who is now the vice president of human resources at Fontainebleau. She was the HR director there. And she says, Steve, you're an entrepreneur at heart. I can see it. Right. And she's like, you're going to have a lot of freedom here to create things, to do things that you want to do. Hmm. And St. Regis, the hotel manager, looked me in the face and said, you're not going to have a day off for 90 days.
Get ready.
Get ready. And I was like, all right, I just got engaged. Do I want to be gone for 90 days, basically, or do I want to go be an entrepreneur within a hotel? And that's how I chose Viceroy. It was one of those choices. I never had that choice before. And I went with Viceroy, and it was awesome. I love that hotel.
Let's take a quick pause there, Steve, because I'd love to understand, you know, that's a key moment in your life. And, and a moment where it could have gone very, very differently. What was your thought process like? Do you remember how you valued the decisions and what actions you were taking?
Look, first was all right, I knew that I really liked five-star, five-diamond service. Like I had at Mandarin. I had missed that actually when I went to the Delano, like that standard of what you're going to do. St. Regis was all about that and still is to this day. I was just there for that 50 hotels in 50 days. Still doing a great job. Same money from both. I was getting a half step back in title at St. Regis and basically like a promotion in title going to Viceroy. And I would have a life at Viceroy is how I looked at it. And that's, I remember the decision was both great brands. One is a little bit more flexible and I went with Viceroy. And that was really how I broke it down with my then fiance, who's now my wife. I'm afraid if I had done it the other way, maybe it wouldn't have worked.
Who knows? Who knows? Many things would have gone differently, but you certainly wouldn't be here in front of me. You'd probably be somewhere completely different, right? So, and wearing a nice tie with it as well. So.
Still having the I only have three ties now, by the way. I have a giant tie collection, and now I have three just in case I need one.
I don't own a single tie. Like I've been thinking about, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, if somebody, invites me to a wedding or anything, the first thing I have to do is go buy a tie or maybe show up without one, you know, like that's the decision. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's very similar in that regard. So amazing. So then you went to Viceroy, and Viceroy was taking off, right? It was a great moment for that brand. And especially in Miami when it first arrived, a beautiful building, great location.
Awesome. We had a great club. Yeah. Beginning of Brickell, we were like the place to be. I got to build my own team and I pulled people from Lowe's, from Mandarin, from Delano, all my favorite people. So I got to go to all these places and then bring people over, and people yelled at me for recruiting for their people. But I was like, I got to build my dream team. It was awesome. Yeah. And I had a great time there. But then again, Viceroy wasn't going to be the brand anymore at the hotel. Like it got a little shaky. You know, W was going to be coming in.
This is when W was going to come in. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And I was all about it, but then Sylvia, who I mentioned earlier, went over to Trump Doral, and this is before all the politics, and this was a Marriott. It was a giant Marriott resort, 800 rooms, 800 acres, mega place, and she went over there, and she said, come see this place. I lived in Miami my whole life. I've been to Doral like a handful of times. This is not how it is now, Doral.
Yeah,
it was just the resort and golf and homes, and Carnival Cruise Line was out there. And I remember going, and I turned the job down three times, or two times. The third time, the reason I did was I went there, it was beat up. Like, it was not my brand. Like, now you talk about, like, people talk about your brand. Like,
yeah.
It was not a premier property. It was a rundown convention hotel. But the Trump family had bought it. I didn't know much about him other than that he was on TV at the time. Mm-hmm. But what sold me was going there, and Ivanka Trump was there on my third visit. And they said, just come one more time. They knew what was going on. They told me after. So Ivanka Trump's there. She's like, look what we're building. It would be great to have you on the team. And they showed me the renderings, and it was beautiful. And I said, you know what? And they said, we're going to make you an assistant director at this time. So I'd never been on a director level, food and beverage, more money than I'd ever seen. I kept raising it each time. And it was a hard decision because I brought all my people. It was the first time I had brought people to a hotel where I worked.
Yeah, the allegiance was to a group of humans that were actually
right, because I would be loyal to people. And so I had, that's why I said no twice. So on the third time when I said yes, I was heartbreaking. I remember I told them it was right before the holidays. My last day there was the day before Christmas. And then I started Christmas Eve, Trump Doral.
Of course.
You know, of course how it goes. And my first day at Doral, they fired the F&B director. And I was by myself as assistant F&B director of this giant hotel, which I had never run. And they said, you're now in charge. And I said, all right. And so it went like that for 6 months. But that's how I ended up over there. That's a whole other story. But that's it was cool. But that was the first time I felt really bad because I left a team that I had built.
Yeah.
And you don't realize the impact that has on people when you do that. And I felt very bad about it.
Yeah, you feel the impact much later, like, you know, weeks afterwards, right? For me, it's always been when I get a note from someone that says it's not the same without you. And of course, it's not. Like you said earlier on, you know, one person comes with their style, with their approach. You've lived through experiences together. So there's so much there and so much shared energy that when you leave, it's like a vacuum, right? And so for anybody that's been successful in a leadership role, it's difficult for that next person to come and fill those shoes, right? Because energetically you've given so much and there's been such an exchange there that it's difficult to replicate and surpass it in many cases, right?
I felt bad for a long time, but then I saw them all do very well, right? Yeah. And if they hadn't been in that place and gotten bigger titles and had more responsibility they gave them, they wouldn't have gotten their next steps, right?
And,
they probably
and
would
I'm
still
sure,
be at those places.
Well, and I'm sure some of those people have continued down the path and reconnected with you.
Now I'm connected. One was still mad at me for a long time, but then he's now good. And everyone else that there, we're good friends now. So
cool.
It's good news. Yeah.
So at that point, was that when you started kind of getting back into staffing? And
yeah, so how that happens is I'm at Doral working harder than ever because first I have to learn how to be a director of F&B because I was not, and I'm an assistant director. And I was doing that for 6 months and held it together. I was very proud of myself, held it together. Got through a big portion of this renovation. And this is where the story comes full circle, by the way. This is a cool part that I haven't shared with anybody, only privately. So you got this one.
I love it.
At Doral, they say, all right, Steve, you've done an awesome job. We want to teach you more. So we need to find you a good F&B director. I was like, that was the one time where I was like, yes, I need to learn more. There's a lot that I did not know at a giant place like that. And they say, we're actually going to include you in the interviews. So you could help interview the person that's going to be your boss.
Nice.
And it comes down to two people. And one of them was a person who told me in his office that you're not made for hospitality.
Unbelievable.
And I looked at the F&B director or at the HR director. I said, if this person comes here, I'm out.
You can say goodbye. Yeah.
And they went with the other guy who's now one of my very good friends for a long, long time, Gabriel Constantine.
Wow.
So I've never shared that with anybody.
That's
I think
amazing.
I'm far enough away from it. You know, it's been enough time.
And I'm sure you've reflected on it all. And talk about, again, full circle, how things work out or don't work out for a specific reason. But and it's all interconnected, whether you like it or not, you know?
So that moment, I haven't shared that publicly, but it was a good moment to be able to say like, oh, okay.
Vindication
now,
in a way.
I wasn't made for it. Now I'm being recruited to places. Now you need something. Sorry, brother. That's not going to happen here. But it was great to be with Gabriel, who was a great leader for me. And so the way the staffing happened was, you know, when you're renovating, you don't need full-time staff all the time. And this was, I learned how hard it is to renovate a giant place while you're open. is really hard. I'd rather just shut down the place, renovate. Totally. You know, it's not my millions of dollars, but I understand you need some revenue coming in, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
But part of it was we had all these staffing companies in Miami come into the hotel and they were terrible, like awful. And I remember thinking, like, I did this for a year. It's not ultra hard. And we're signing these giant checks. It was like 100,000, 150,000, 200,000, like every month to these companies. I was like,
yeah,
I could do this. And that's really what happened. So I went to my GM and I said, look, I know it's a little slow right now. I have just a kind of crazy proposition for you. And I understand it's a no. I said, I want to try to open a staffing company and I just need a month off. We're dead slow right now. It's the summer. Let me try to do this. And if it doesn't work, can I come back? And he looked at me. He said, Steve, I think you're going to crush it. I'm going to give you this month. I don't think I'm going to see you again. And so the guy was David Fader. He rest in peace.
Great
was a great guy.
Yes. Great
and
guy.
He said, I'm going to give it to you. I want you to try it. We're going to give you the time off because one, we're a little slow and you have some vacation time, go do it. And that's how it happened. It was just like that. And I went out, I found it was before WeWork. I found a shared workspace on 7th and Brickell because I needed like the fancy address.
Yep.
You know, I got a virtual workspace and then I just started calling hotels. And the first hotel I called was a guy who I'd known at the Intercontinental Hotel. Alan Aris was the HR director. I said, hey, I started a staffing company and I see you need banquet servers because I see you posted them. I have staff banquet servers for you. And he said, great, because I don't like our staffing company. I need 25 servers in 14 days for our Make-A-Wish Gala. Do you have them? I said, yes. I did not have any.
You needed to go find them all. Yeah.
I did not have any. But I put out ads. I hustled. I got 25 great servers. I called friends. I was like, hey, just come in and be a server for me. And because of that, I got my first contract, which turned out to be $1 million contract to take over all the banquet servers. And that was it. David Fader was right. I told him, he said, I'm going to wish you the best and go crush it. And I did that for 4 years.
When you made that change, because that was a big change, it was really following a dream. Perhaps it wasn't a dream. It was a dream that kind of maybe came overnight. It wasn't something you weren't like dreaming, you know, when you were 14, I'm going to have a staffing company. But what was the, like, what were those moments like? I would say that the exciting manifesting moments, those moments when you were like, this is going to happen. Like, I am going to... What was that like?
I think it was a couple of things happened. First, Donald Trump had come to the hotel several times. Like he was there a lot and we were doing an awesome job. Like we were creating something really special and he had said something to us like right before New Year's, like, man, we're going to open next year. You guys have crushed it. You're going to make me a ton of money. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to make you a ton of money.
Yeah.
And I'm not making any extra and I'm light bulb crushed. Right. I didn't have kids at the time. And I was like, I know I could do this. And I'll talk about like passion versus the opportunity. I said, I know I could do this. And so I just started going, I didn't know how to run a business. Like my dad's an attorney. My mom was a business owner. I didn't really know too many. And so I just started going to like the small business association on my days off to like sit in on meetings. And you get a free advisor at the SBA. They give you one to like talk to and how to make the business plan. I knew how to do some of it. Right. But there was no like ChatGPT create me a business plan back then. It was, you had to make it, type out each page. And so I did. And all of a sudden numbers looked good. I was like, this looks like it makes sense. And I got some investment from some friends because I needed to cover payroll. And I took out a small business loan, which was a big mistake at the time. I'll tell you why. And I was like, all right, I got 200,000 bucks. I could do this. I got enough money for payroll. Forgetting that hotels don't pay on time.
Right? Yeah, of course.
So,
of course.
But that was it. And so that was the moment that I was like, all right, I did the plan. It shows I'm going to make money. I got the first lead. The hotel really just kind of told me I could go and come back, worst case. Right. So,
yeah, you had nothing to lose at that point.
Nothing to lose. So it was really, let's go. And it was awesome. It crushed. It did awesome. And then 6 months in, I was doing so well. What you don't realize is as you grow, and looking back, it's silly, but as you grow, you have a payroll that keeps growing.
Yeah, of course.
And that money doesn't come in until like really 60 days later, because hotels take forever to pay you.
Yeah.
You have to pay those people every 2 weeks.
Yes.
And so I remember 6 months in, a big panic hit, like, oh my God, my payroll is over my loan amount. I have to pay more than 200,000, which is a great problem to have, but I didn't have the money. So I'd like cash out 401ks, you know, figure out how I was going to cover money, which I did. Never missed a payroll, but that was the first time in my life where I had like a full out panic attack that these people are going to come kill me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it talks about a lot of the entrepreneurial road, and we can talk about that in a greater length, is not an easy one. It's not for the faint of heart, right? You went from, and I'm going through this now, where I went from the consistency of a paycheck, being that person receiving that paycheck every 2 weeks, having a good idea of what your bonus was going to look like and where it was going to be used and where how much was going to be in the bank for afterwards. It was the safe life, I would say, in that regard, right? To going into a kind of roller coaster of income where you may not have it equally every month, but B, once you start building a team around you, now you are the one that has the responsibility for every single one of these humans and their families. So it's a major change.
It's a huge change.
And that's when you really start realizing that it's not for everyone.
No. And I remember sitting there thinking, because I'm a good person. I want to make sure I can go to sleep at night the right way. And I didn't realize the shadiness going on in the staffing world, especially in hotels, right? And I always thought about like this, like I represent the name on my back, Turk, right? Like that's who I represent. And I'm not going to be that shady dude doing shady things. And when I say that, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And I couldn't compete 3-4 years in because there were some new competitors that were hiring people that weren't legal to work in the country.
Yeah.
Weren't covering insurance, weren't doing the drug tests and background checks like I was doing.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, hotels didn't care about that, right? They just care that, hey, the contract says they're legal. The contract says they're doing this, even though I knew that was not happening.
Yeah.
It was not enjoyable. And I had built my team to 1,300 people, active employees out on the streets.
Wow. And so what did you do?
So it was interesting. 2 years in, we were crushing. Like we were like the hottest thing in town. That's when I met you, right? We were staffing your hotel, Fontainebleau, Eden Rock, every big hotel.
All the big ones.
Yeah, we were everywhere. And a company tried to buy us out of New York. And at the time, I was like, no, this is not for me. We're good. I'm going to keep growing this. I think we've got a long way ahead. And then in year four, I just was not enjoying it anymore. And that company knocked again. They're like, hey, you still have the contracts you've got? I was like, yeah, I still got the contracts. And they wanted to buy the company. And I saw the number they wrote down. I was like, that's how much you want to pay for it? Deal.
It's yours.
It's yours. And this goes back to, I said this, opportunity versus passion. And my right hand there, great. She was awesome. Anna Cruz. I miss working with her all the time. She was my right hand since like the first week. She was like my first hire I brought from Trump Doral, right? And she says, Steve, you're not passionate about staffing, right? You were opportunistic. You saw an opportunity. You struck. You knew you can make money on it. But that's why you don't love it every day. Hmm. That's why you don't enjoy coming to this office every day. You're not passionate about staffing. And I was like, you know what? It hit home. I still talk about it now. I was like, you're right. That was not something I was passionate about. That's why it wasn't fun. And so this company bought it. They got these awesome contracts. They were happy. It was a win-win for everybody. And I was good to get out of staffing. So people ask me like, Steve, we need staffing companies now. We need recruiting companies. Like, not for me. Not my world.
Yeah. Someone else. Yeah. And so, and interestingly at that point, so you cashed out, you had some time to reevaluate, I'm sure, what was important, and you went back into hotels.
Yeah, I did. And so some stuff that you touched on, I had put so much effort. You don't realize how much effort it is to have your own business. Like you said, you eat what you kill. So you're always hunting. Yeah. You got to be hunting all the time, and you have to enjoy networking and out at events and meeting people and reconnecting. And I was tired a little bit, right? I was like, man, I don't know if I could rebuild something like this. And I'd made good money. So I put some money in like investments in other like startups. Cause I was just like, let me see where this goes. Some of them did pretty good, like nice revenue. But I remember talking to one of my mentors back at Lowe's, Mutlu Kachuk. I was like, hey, Mutlu, he was still at Lowe's.
Another great guy.
Awesome. I was like, hey man, I just sold the company. I'm going to take a couple months off to reevaluate, but I really miss being at a hotel. Even days like now, like today, I actually miss being in hotels certain days.
Yeah.
And so he's like, really? Because we talked a lot. He's like, you were just crushing. Like you just sold the company. You could do 1,000 things. Like, no, I really miss being in a hotel. And he came to me and he said, look, I may have an opportunity. I'm going to another hotel. I'm going to the Eden Rock, Nobu Eden Rock. And you would have to start at the position you were 4 years ago. as an assistant F&B director, making way less money than you were making. Are you down for that? I took a minute. I was like, you know what? No ego here, man. I have my money that I made. I could do this. Let me just get back on track to my goal. And in that book, I have it here. For 4 years, I wrote down, I'm going to be the general manager of an iconic Miami Beach hotel. I wrote it every day. I was like, that'll get me back on track. And that's what I did.
Amazing. So that's the power of, there's so, again, so many lessons there, guys. You know, I think, first of all, I understand, because I followed this as well, the need to make money, right? And that you're tied to a number because your lifestyle is tied to a number. When you have children, that number, of course,
changes big time.
The reasons why or how you spend that money changes big time. And so all of that, I totally understand that. But going back to this idea of passion versus opportunity, it always levels out. First of all, you know, passion will always come back and haunt you in a way, because if you're not following it, then you're not your truest, best version. And there's always something in the back saying, this is not it, right? And you can try to mask it with ambition. You can try to mask it with money. You can try to mask it with a title, but it eats at you is the first thing. And then the second thing is that idea of writing something down and saying, this is going to happen and I'm going to get back on track. And how beautiful that you were able to kind of keep writing that and writing that and writing that, right? And I remember, Steve, you know, the passion that you exuded in that role is probably where I saw a new life in you. You came back in the industry. You were so incredibly grateful for every day that you were doing that job. And I remember, you know, your LinkedIn posts, your Instagram posts were about highlighting the amazing team, the amazing job that your team did, the cool creativity that you guys had. Tell me a little bit about that phase of and that role and what that felt and meant like for you.
I'll give it in two phases. I'll give it the quick. So I got back in the hotel and I don't think you realize, or I didn't, how hard I was working as an entrepreneur. Because when you bring that back into a corporate world, you're really like way ahead of many
others. You're flying. Yeah, you're flying.
Like everything's clicking. Like I could read the P&L, like no problem. You have a problem, I got a solution. You need like, and I kind of felt bad because I came in with all that and the executive on top, my boss, couldn't keep up. Hmm. And so unfortunately they made a change and they promoted me to F&B director, right? So within very quickly, that was not the plan. I remember Mutlu telling me like, you need to wait 2 years, and it was one month. Right. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to outwork everybody here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get here and grind and show people I deserve to be here.
Yeah.
But I was grateful because now I got that executive title for the first time. And I really was grateful to the team. And I was like, I'm going to make sure we do some of the coolest stuff ever here. And I'm going to highlight it. I started listening to, you know, I was always like a Tony Robbins fan and all these people. But Gary Vaynerchuk came on the scene around that time, like 2018, 19 in my eyes, and social media and the power of it and building your brand. I was like, I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it in a way where I'm highlighting great things that we're doing.
Yeah.
And everyone will be included.
And I love that was the piece. That was the piece that to me was super inspirational. It wasn't about you anymore, Steve. You know, it wasn't, you know, to me, I mean, I don't think that you had a career personality where it was ever about you, but like it was, you were so specific about highlighting the team and the hard work that they put in, but also their creativity. And you were like, these guys make my life easy in a way. Yeah. And that was the story. It was so beautiful. I really enjoyed that point in time in your career and following it.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And for me, it was just cool because I was like, man, I don't see this too often. Like, you're not seeing it anywhere. Like, I want to see like behind the scenes of stuff. Now we see it a lot, which is cool.
Yeah.
And I still like to see more of like the real behind the scenes.
Totally.
Certain companies don't want it. I understand.
But I think it's silly because like, and then you talk about the issues and we'll get into at the very end of this, like where we see hospitality going, but I think we can get into it right now. Like to me, it's kind of, we do such a good job as companies of highlighting the guest side, like come and stay. This is the experience. This is what you're going to enjoy. This is how you're going to enjoy it, et cetera. And there's not one solid marketing campaign in hospitality where it's like, this is what your life is like if you're attached to this team. If you are part of this organization, this is all the great stuff that comes. you see some of these campaigns, but they're crap. Honestly, they're, you know, like, oh, we give you a, and it's, you know, it's like show something that really will make people proud, you know?
Yeah.
And there isn't much of that, unfortunately. I don't know if you've seen anything like that.
I love all the companies I work with. I have nothing bad to say about any of them. At Lowe's, when I went back there as director of food and beverage, I remember we had our first exec retreat. I was like, I want to do a podcast about the team. I want to tell where how Jean-Paul came from Haiti and had nothing and is now the director of this position, or like the best steward, right? And this busser. And like, I wanted to tell those stories and I was shut down. They're like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
And so that's where actually the Hospitality Mentor podcast came from. I wanted to do it and I wasn't allowed to. And so sometimes, you know, I was like that person, like trying to always do stuff that wasn't allowed to get done. But I think there's so many incredible stories that would motivate people. Like, wow, like these people changed their lives. They came from countries with nothing and they now have a family and their kids are even working at that hotel in certain situations and making a life for themselves. And it's just cool to see this industry is one of the few where you can really start at the bottom. And if you do really good, end up at the top.
And no matter what your education level is, right?
I've interviewed really so many people now. I've interviewed over 150 people and so many of them started a dishwasher. Host.
With only an ambition and a dream
that's what's cool about this industry.
It is.
There's very few industries that you can do that without having the proper education and things like that. So
you're absolutely right.
Anyhow, we went sidetracked a little bit, I think.
No, it's all good. I think it's beautiful to talk about these lessons and also to give hope to people that, you know, like hopefully with people like you and I that are really focused on showcasing the industry and focused on the day-to-day people, right? It doesn't always have to be the top CEO of a company or a top, because those have a lot of lessons and a lot of wisdom. And I think it's great to have some of those in there, but it's the normal people that are just, you know, trying to make a living and, you know, taking a job because of the additional pay. And then when they realize, okay, there's more to life than just the pay, you know, that's a lesson, because we all go through something like that, right?
We've all been. And also you forget to take taxes out sometimes, right? So you see these big offers, you take the taxes out, you realize it's not that big a change.
You're right.
But there are people that do, like I think back another, when I was talking about Mandarin, we talk about people that are really great that taught me. There's a gentleman named Francisco Nieto. He was big position at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. He was towards the end of his career. I've lost track of him. I wish I could find him. But he was probably like in his 70s, and he came to the Mandarin Oriental, and he was the assistant restaurant manager. And he said, Steve, I'm not going to do any paperwork. I'm not going to do any payroll, but I'm going to teach you everything you need to know to be a great general manager. Mm-hmm. And that was like my school. Every day with him, he came back, just wanted to be maitre d', and I watched him like delight the room and make, you know, Caesar salads tableside for people and all these crazy things. But he taught me a lot, and
I'm curious,
not many people like that.
You and I had a discussion about this the last time we were together in Miami. But you've run food and beverage, you've run operations, you've been on the staffing side, and I think that there is a mistake that's made right now, and I think it's, you know, it's been like this for the last few decades at least, is that, you know, we typically promote people from one position into another because they were really good at that position. But then they get to that next position, which is typically a people leader's position, and they fail, right? So what's your perspective on how the industry could do a better job if evading that problem, or perhaps, focusing on the actual nature of the human being?
I think that in hotels, and even in other, like we're doing it right now, my vacation rental company, because we're growing, is you need some kind of operating system for that division and for that hotel. And when I say this, there needs to be ways to track of what's going on. Because when I got promoted that first time when I was young that we talked about, I didn't know what I was doing. They just told me, you're promoted now, figure out how to be the director of restaurants.
That's right.
Right? There was no system in place.
You're the boss.
Figure it out. There was no like, hey, you do your departmental meeting on this day, then you follow up on this day, and here's your one-on-ones, and here's how you track to-dos, and here's how it measures the KPIs. Like, there was none of that. And there's still a lot of hotels that have none of that, right? You could walk into a lot of hotels, and you asked a manager or a department head, like, hey, what is your goals this year? What's the vision this year? They do not know.
Yes.
And I think that really focusing on building that for hotels is the way to go. And that's how I was able to succeed, because I did that in my company, which I ran like a startup, a technology startup. That's what I learned stuff for in the entrepreneur world. And that's how you're able to do so much and hold people accountable. There's nothing like that right now in hotels.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I haven't seen it. I don't know if you've seen it, where I could walk in and every manager is running on the same system. Everyone has their own thing. I learned this from here. I learned this from there.
No.
As a GM,
I remember when I was a GM, I also saw this major gap. You know, for me, the gap was like, it's crazy to me that you aren't necessarily fully running your P&L, or you don't know your P&L, your financials, until you become a director, right? And because that was my experience, right? I became a director and I was like, oh, wow, now I need to go defend my P&L next week in front of ownership in a meeting.
Yeah.
What? You know, nobody had given me any sort of education on what that was like, right? And so I always had this attitude, I will never let people underneath me go into that same situation without being fully prepared, right? And I really focused hard on, you know, making sure that the team, like you say, you know, had an idea of like, you have to hold one-on-ones. And when you have these one-on-ones, what does a proper one-on-one look like? And what are the things you discuss? What is the first conversation look like when you hire a new person on your team? Do they know what the expectations are underneath your leadership? What are your pet peeves? How do you communicate? How do they like communicating? All of that, right? But I had to learn all that stuff the hard way, for sure. And aligning my team to being okay with, we like to speak up in these executive committee meetings. These are meetings where it's okay to get uncomfortable. But if you're not the one setting the tone, everybody just runs assuming that that their way of doing it is the right one. And that's where the disconnect occurs. And so I remember a few years back, one of the best books that I ever read was Everyone Deserves a Great Leader. A good friend of mine, Scott Miller. And what I liked about this book was that it gave you very practical examples of what it meant to be a great leader. And so that's the book I've gifted the most to my team. So if I had a new leader underneath me, here's your copy of the book. Read it, digest it. We're going to go through this because it teaches, you know, how to run a proper one-on-one, for example, to that level of practicality. But you're right. Right now, it's a big, big gap that occurs.
Yeah. And I just think that when people ask me how they can make more of an impact, if you lift this podcast with anything and you're a leader right now, you need to have one-on-ones with each of your direct reports every week, same day, same time. Yes, things happen in a hotel. They need to have that with you. And the way I always set it up was, it's your meeting. So if Dave, we were having, I said, hey, the first 10 minutes, David, is your, whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about your dog or your kids or your wife or how hard everything is at work, whatever, it's yours. Second 10 minutes is for me. Here's what I need from you. We're going to assign due dates to this. You sure you're good with that due date? All right. You're choosing it, David. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. And then the last 10 minutes is, how are we going to get you to the next level that you want to get to?
Yeah.
What are we doing this week to get there?
Nice. That's what I did. Easy formula. Nice, easy formula.
Yeah. 10, 10, 10. And if I remember, there were certain leaders that had been there a long time, like, this is mumbo jumbo. And when I left, they're like, that's the one thing I'm going to miss, is like, we developed a lot of quality time and personal time in those meetings every week.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you say, a lot of things happen in hotels. And so it's easy for us to like move a one-on-one. And then the next week, okay, it's his day off or whatever it is. And then the next thing you know, it's 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks later, and it's performance review time. And you're giving him a bunch of feedback or her a bunch of feedback, and it all comes as a surprise. How many times have you heard of those situations in hotels?
And No one told me.
How can I be in the situation where I'm failing, where, you know, that can't happen.
That's on the leader, sadly, if they didn't know, it's like,
sadly, it happens more often than not. So let's quickly jump into, we've got a little bit of time here. I know that we will definitely record 5 or 6 of these because there's so much great insight here. But you went from going back into the hotel world to then deciding to jump back out and actually go back into what I see is passion, full passion project and entrepreneur mode. Tell us a little bit about how that transition happened.
Yeah, look. Prior to the pandemic, changed everything. Prior to the pandemic, I was back at Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel, where I had started my career, director of food and beverage at an 800-room property. I was living the life. Like, I remember, I loved it. I loved going in every day. I had my team in place. Best job ever. Pandemic comes. Like, the last week before the pandemic was the Super Bowl, right? Like, I had the Super Bowl in our hotel. Tom Brady's here. Brett Favre. Every celebrity. Everything. Kevin Hart. Jay-Z. Shaq. Everyone's here. Awesome. I can't believe it. Then 2 weeks later, it's pandemic. We're shutting down the hotel. And I remember I'd been sent home. I've never been sent home. None of us had. And I had that quality time at home with my family for 3 months. And then I was like, all right, I thought it was gonna be 2 weeks. Now it's another month. What could I do? I started dabbling with stuff again. That entrepreneurial itch started coming back in because I had time to sit and think about stuff I liked. And I just started writing again. I like to start a journaling on like, what would I do? How could I do it? How can I make something online that stands out and makes money when I'm not working?
Yeah.
I started writing all these ideas down. Got the call to go back to the hotel. I was like, thank goodness, I'm out of here.
It's time.
It's time. Let's go back to what the goal is. GM of Iconic Hotel, right? I was still writing that down during the pandemic every day too. And then it was much different, right? All of a sudden, my team of 40 leaders is me and a chef and a manager. And it was very hard. There was on Wednesdays, I was a security officer at the loading dock. Right? Like sitting at the loading dock for 8 hours just because that was it. And I was happy to be there.
You know, doing temperature checks. Yeah.
I was happy to be that person. I was getting paid, so I could not complain.
Yep.
But then I just started, it didn't get any easier. It only got harder. Right. Yep. And people started coming to Miami, and there's a lot of things that happened. And it was about, you know, I'd say a year in, I've been working hard, grinding. It still was not anywhere close to being back to normal. And it was June of 2020, and my daughter called me. She's like, Dad, I haven't seen you, right? She's 6 years old at this time, right? Five and a half. She's like, I haven't seen you. Where have you been? Because I was leaving at 6 a.m. and not getting back to like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And it was a Saturday, and I happened to be cleaning hotel rooms because we didn't have enough housekeepers in this 800-room hotel. And it's a beautiful Saturday out. I looked out the window. The ocean is glistening on South Beach. And I'm cleaning up a room that had just been puked in from someone partying. And I'm like, my daughter's calling me. I was like, I got to make a change.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. And I didn't know what it was. And I sat down and I just wrote down everything I knew how to do. Everything. Sports. Everything I knew how to do. And then I circled all the things that I loved to do. And then I highlighted the ones that I think I could make money at. Hmm. And during that time, I was also using LinkedIn heavily. So if you go back to 2020, 2021, I was writing to myself a lot of days. It was like motivational stuff. Like I was actually writing to myself that people don't realize. It was like, you got this. And sometimes you'll see that pop up. I'm really writing to myself if you see that. And so someone in Texas wrote to me that their restaurant was struggling, asked for an idea. I gave it to them without thinking. And he wrote back to me 2 weeks later. He was like, hey, you saved my restaurant from closing. How much do I owe you? I got to pay you something. And that's where it clicked. It's like, I could do this. And so I looked down at the sheet of all the things I highlighted. I could teach these things. I could consult. This could get me out of the day-to-day. And that's how it started. As I gave my notice, I gave my friend Mutlu a June notice to leave at the end of October. So I gave him plenty of time.
Yeah.
And said, I'm going to be out of here. I'm going to give you all my effort because I love you and I love this place. And that was it.
Amazing. And there's so much going on right now. So just in a few minutes, let's dive into, there's two more things that I'd like to talk for this episode, because then we're going to have to go on to so many other things. The first one is, let's talk about Hospitality Mentor a little bit and what that is. And then the second piece is, what are some of the habits that you have, routines that you have, or rituals that you have today to keep you accountable, to keep you grounded, and to keep you aware and conscious? So let's start with Hospitality Mentor, and then we can transition into the last individual
piece. Yeah, so Hospitality Mentor, you can check it out at hospitalitymentor.com. It really started as a lead generator, right? Because I knew from the first round as an entrepreneur, all the friends that tell you they're going to help you when you're heading out on your journey, oh, I'm going to support you so much, I'm going to help you, most of them do not, right? And then all of a sudden, you're a vendor. And those leaders don't want to talk to a vendor. And very quickly, I realized I need a lead in, and this was something I planned. I'm going to interview these people, because there was one leader, I'll call him out because we're friends, would not get on the phone with me to pitch. I just wrote a message, say, hey, man, I started a podcast. I would love to talk about your journey. Will you be on it? Absolutely. On the podcast. Got to spend a great hour with that person to tell their story, make a little pitch of 30 seconds at the end. Right. And that's how it started. But now it's morphed into this whole thing where people really enjoy it. Now they're sponsors. Now I'm getting invited to places to speak and being paid to speak, which is crazy to me.
Amazing.
Working on a book to tie all this together, and love it. I really hope I can build that thing up. That's not hope. I'm going to.
Where you will. Indeed.
I will. That it is going to be what I do the most, because I love doing that. Yeah. I love teaching. I love speaking, and I love doing that.
And again, you're so good at it, Steve. You know, you're so good at inspiring people. You're such a good connector. I mean, these events that you're creating, the networking events that you're creating, are an incredible manifestation of that, right? Of trying to bring the right people and just to build a beautiful community of like-minded hospitality professionals. And you could see it in their excitement there. You know, we've all been to these events where like you go because you know you have to, right? Because if not, like, but these events that you create, people want to go. They're super excited to be there. They know they're going to be fun. They know they're going to get something great out of it. There's just nothing negative about it, right? So it goes to show that when you put a lot of heart, passion, the energy comes back, right? So everything that you, and you stop chasing, right? That's the beauty of it too, right? So you start attracting, you stop chasing. That's the power of intentionality as well, right? So let's jump quickly in because I know we've got to end the podcast here soon, but let's talk a little bit about you, your day-to-day life. What are the things that you do right now as a human being to live intentionally, to live in passion, to live out of the heart, and to not get distracted by everything that this crazy life throws at us?
Look, I have a journal that I love using. It's just one line a day. It's what helped me kind of get started to write down things. And it's just a good way to say, what did I do today that was really cool that I can look back on and talk about? Maybe it was something that I struggled with. Maybe it was something challenging, something I got to work on. So I write down one thing a day. That's for sure. The other part now with two kids, I have a lot of excuses of why I don't work out consistently, but I found time for the sauna, right? Nice. And so having that sauna break with nothing, sometimes I'll play like some like Hans Zimmer soundtrack is usually what I go to, but cool. Nothing that's like podcasts or in my head, but just I can sit down there. A lot of great thoughts come while I'm sitting in there for 20, 25 minutes. And then I act on those because you have that like energy and sometimes you'll have a good thought. Then you don't do anything with it, but I'll act on those. And so really those two things help me because I catch myself. You're always on the go. You're all, where's the next lead? I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Pinterest now, like all these things that you want to keep up going all the time.
Yeah.
I schedule it, but I caught myself today. I was doing 50 hotels in 50 days, going to hotel number 30.
Yeah.
And I was just, well, it was a beautiful day. I was like, I'm in Miami Beach. It's beautiful. Look at the sun is on my face. Look at the air. Beautiful day. I took a moment just to enjoy like what I get to do where 3 years ago, I would not have been able to.
No, you would have been grinding. Yeah, exactly. That's the beautiful. And that's at the end of the day, it's about those small moments. It's not about the big hour long morning routine, all of that. Those are the things that help instill a little bit of discipline in people. But for us that, you know, we've grown up that way, right? With discipline, because you needed to have discipline to succeed and to be a leader in these hotels and do everything. It's a little easier, right? But for those people that don't necessarily have that discipline, it's a great way to start getting into this rhythm. But then that translates into these little moments, right? It's taking 2 seconds saying, wow, look at this view, pinch me, or feel the heat where other people are freezing, pinch me, or, you know, smell the breeze of the ocean, pinch me. Those moments, those pinch me moments that create such a beautiful appreciation for what life is.
Yeah. And yesterday, I'll leave you with this because I know we're running long here, is yesterday on CBS Sunday Morning. I watched this on YouTube, actually, as I watched it in clips, but they had a whole segment on being lazy and how that's actually very important for life, and how some of the best workers only worked 4 hours a day and the rest of the day was used for contemplation and thinking and being artistic and enjoying life. And so my wife and I watched that last night and it kind of struck a chord because at least me, is like, if I'm not grinding, I'm not
for sure
putting in hard work, I'm being lazy, it's not good. And this was like, no, you need that time. You take that time. That's how you'll be more successful.
And that translates to children as well, right? So children are losing the art of being bored, and the amount of creativity that's being lost because of it is so evident, right? And so it works for adults. It works for children, right? It's an opportunity to give space, and that space brings ideas. You know, I think I'll leave everybody with this invitation, and this can be the continuation of the next episode that Steve and I record together, is how much are you consuming versus creating versus ruminating and contemplating? And I think that balance needs to be found, right? Because we either overconsume, most of us, we overcreate sometimes, and we definitely don't leave enough room for reflection and introspection and just kind of being, which is also beautiful. So, Steve, thank you so much for your time. I'm so incredibly grateful for your friendship. I'm incredible for the wisdom, and you know, wisdom comes with experience, and you've done it. You've been around the block. I'm so excited to see hotels 30 through 50 on your daily 50 hotels in 50 days. I think it's amazing what you're doing. Thank you for showcasing this industry, for instilling pride in us. If people want to connect with you and they want to know more about your business, how to get on the podcast, whatever it is, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Listen, best way, number one, LinkedIn. I'm on there every single day, multiple times a day, because I just found it to be a place I like hanging out and talking to people. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Steve Turk. And you can also check out thehospitalitymentor.com. If you ever want me to come speak at any of your places or meet any of you in person, you can do it there.
Steve is a great representation of hospitality. He is hospitality in its true essence. You can see it in his smile. You can see it in the energy he shares and in the content that he's bringing to the table. Steve, once again, thank you so much. And to everybody listening, we'll be back next week with another great episode. Thank you, and stay conscious and stay connected. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you so much.